Today's podcast is brought to you by Every Wednesday, a plan to inspire the people of Portland and support the place we call home. Let's get out of the house and spend some time with each other. Skip Zoom, meet for coffee, take your colleagues out to happy hour. Buying a gift? Ditch the internet and support a local maker by shopping in-store. Head into town every Wednesday and see what's going on at everywednesdaypdx.com.
Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show.
On today's episode of The Dive, I'm talking to Nigel Jaquess about his Willamette Week cover story, Track Addicts, an in-depth investigation into the obscure Oregon agency that is quietly but powerfully enabling the animal racing industry worldwide. It's Saturday, May 20th, and this is episode 124 of The Dive. The Oregon Racing Commission is a government agency tasked with overseeing horse and dog racing, even though there's very little animal racing left in Oregon, and it's mostly at county fairs. But this commission exists not so much to regulate local animal races, but to prop up a network of gamblers placing digital bets on ponies, dogs, and digital ponies and dogs worldwide. The kicker is that this commission capped the amount of taxes that they can take. So despite creating and propping up this billion-dollar industry, the state has very little to show for it monetarily. I'll have Nigel explain how and why this commission exists, and we'll unpack why some believe it ought to get the Portland Meadows treatment, i.e. total demolition. But first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. In the wake of Sophie Peel's reporting on the La Mota Escandalo, the OLCC has begun crafting a new rule ensuring cannabis businesses prove tax compliance before granting or renewing a license. Lucas Manfield reports that post-Measure 110, aka the decriminalization of hard drugs, only 5 drug offenders have gotten their fines for possession waived by entering addiction treatment, despite Portland Police Bureau reporting a record number of citations, over 500 since the law went into effect. And on the back pages, Adam Sawyer encourages Portlanders with wanderlust to steal his vacation to Moscow, Idaho. Idaho? Idaho. Idaho? Idaho? Adam breaks down 3 whole days worth of eclectic attractions that are worth the mileage. So yeah, Idaho. Idaho. All right, now let's chat with Nigel about his cover story, Track Addicts.
The Oregon Racing Commission has existed since 1933, and it was established to oversee horse racing in Oregon. And at one time, there was a robust industry in the state. And over time, it also came to oversee greyhound racing, which also used to have a big presence in Oregon. Today, both of those industries have really almost disappeared. There's no more dog racing in Oregon. There hasn't been since 2004. The major racetrack in the major horse racing track in the state, Portland Meadows, closed in 2019. So today, the Racing Commission exists to oversee 3 or 4 county fair meets, Tillamook County, the Crooked River Roundup, sometimes Union County, and also there is some commercial racing at a place called Grants Pass Downs. So really, the industry has almost disappeared from the state.
So this commission, it deals with some county fair action, and then for the rest of the year, it is it acting as a bookie?
No, that's a great question. It's a little bit complicated. So in 1999, the racing industry in Oregon was in a steep decline, and so lobbyists for the dog track, which is the Multnomah Kennel Club, and for Portland Meadows came to the state legislature in Salem, and they said, hey, there's this new thing called the internet, and people are already shopping on it, and we think that people might want to bet over it. And there are horse tracks and dog tracks all over the country, and bettors would like to place bets, from say Florida on a track in California, or from Chicago on a track in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And we think that if Oregon were willing to accept those bets from any state, from bettors in any state on races in any state and even overseas, that there might be a business there, and that business might generate some money that would help us prop up a declining industry. And the legislature had already made a number of attempts to help prop up the industry, but the governor at the time, John Kitzhaber, had vetoed those attempts. So in 1999, Kitzhaber finally said, fine, I will let you give this a try. And nobody knew if it would work. No other state was willing to do it because it seemed to cross some possible, it seemed to possibly violate some federal laws. But Oregon gave it a try, and what happened was no other state really got in. In fact, today Oregon has 95% of the market. Only North Dakota competes with us, and they're far smaller. So the service that we provide is to accumulate the bets from all over the country. In horse and dog racing, people bet against each other. It's called parimutuel wagering. It's different from when you go to a casino. At a casino, you're betting against the house. In horse and dog racing, you're betting against other bettors. Mm-hmm. So what Oregon's service is that it essentially pools all the money from those bettors around the country and allows them to bet, wherever they want. And in fact, today, you're able to bet through these Oregon shops. There are 9 of them. You can bet on dog races and horse races in many countries, Australia, New Zealand, Mexico, the United Kingdom, from your phone anywhere in this country. And it shows that you placed a bet in Oregon on those races. Remember, the internet was really in its infancy. Mm-hmm. And there are always complications when you cross state lines because, first of all, in those days, betting in this country was far legal gambling or betting in this country was far less common. There were casinos in New Jersey and Las Vegas. Other than that, there were some pretty rudimentary state lotteries, and then you could bet on, of course, horses and dogs. But for the most part, you had to go to the track, or you might be able to go to an off-track betting shop, but you were still betting on local races. So the question of crossing state lines was the big question. There are a lot of things that you couldn't do across state lines, and some people at that time thought betting was one of them. In Oregon, the lawyers from the legislature took a different view and said, no, we think this is okay. So it has remained kind of a gray area and a complicated question. One of the many questions that would arise is, okay, if this is legal, why is Oregon so dominant? I can't think of any other endeavor, government or private, in which Oregon has 95% of anything. It's just an absolute dominance. And so there are still states whose legislatures have sort of said, every state's looking for revenue, but a lot of states have looked at this and just decided for whatever reason they don't want to do it. And, Oregon has first mover advantage. We've been doing it for 24 years, and so we've established a track record. But one of the things that's in the story that is really eye-catching is that we charge almost nothing for this service. We get 0.25% of the money bet, which is nothing. So a quarter of a percent. That's the nominal tax that we charge. But in fact, because we made the decision many, many years ago, more than 15 years ago, to cap the total amount that each of these companies would have to pay, our actual tax rate is 0.05%.
Oh my gosh.
0.05, so 0.05 of a percent. And it's really almost free. So let me try and put that in some round numbers. Last year, people bet using these Oregon hubs, $6.4 billion with a B dollars.
Wow.
And Oregon's take from that was less than $4 million.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So the Oregon Racing Commission in a way exists to raise revenue, much like the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Control Commission, much like the Oregon Lottery. But those two agencies, the lottery last year brought in more than $900 million. It's a lot of money, almost $1 billion. Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission brought well over $300 million. And so a lot of people will debate whether the state has any business being in the gambling arena.
Yeah.
They'll debate whether the state should be in the liquor business. And there are many people who say that the state should be in neither, that we shouldn't be promoting gambling and that we shouldn't be promoting the consumption of alcohol, which remains, even with fentanyl ripping through this city and this state, that the public health damage that alcohol does is bigger than any other substance. Mm-hmm. But what people have argued is, well, people are going to drink and they're going to gamble, and if they're going to do that, the state ought to get a piece of it. Okay, fair enough. What you see with this horse racing and dog racing is we're facilitating billions and billions of dollars worth of gambling for nothing, basically for nothing.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that Oregon is kind of propping up this? I mean, it's a pretty divisive industry.
Yeah.
Abusive.
It is fair to say that, because nobody else is offering this service except for North Dakota. We're offering this service. And what has happened over time, dog racing industry in the U.S. has almost disappeared. There's a guy in the story named Kerry Teal who's the executive director of Grey 2K, which is an anti-greyhound racing nonprofit based in Boston. But Kerry got his start in Oregon politics in the 90s and worked for the closure of the track here, and then he and his group have been successful in closing, I think, tracks down in 18 states, to the point now that there's only one state in the United States that allows, that has live dog racing, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason that he and his group have been so successful is they've been able to demonstrate that dog racing results in cruel, inhumane treatment of animals.
Mm-hmm.
Horse racing has declined dramatically as well. One of the things that has happened recently, the Kentucky Derby, the most famous race in American racing, was held a couple of weeks ago, and that very week, 7 horses died at the track where the Derby is held, Churchill Downs in Louisville. Now, Churchill Downs owns the company that is the biggest beneficiary of this betting that Oregon hosts, and the entire horse racing industry in the United States is increasingly dependent on Oregon. It used to be that most money was bet at the tracks or through bars that have off-track betting available. Now the majority of it is done online, and almost all of it's done through Oregon. So yes, we, a state that has almost no racing, is propping up an industry that animal rights activists have over and over demonstrated treats horses very, very badly. They're drugged in ways that you cannot really even imagine. Using the New York Times reported recently that horse trainers use snake venom, they use cancer drugs, they use Viagra. If you can get a horse to consume it, it's been tried as either a stimulant or a depressant. And, the result of drugging horses is that they run faster than their bodies were built to run, or they run through injury, or they they otherwise exert themselves more than they would if they weren't drugged, or less than they would in some cases. And it's bad for them. And you know, horses are bred, overbred. They're abandoned. You know, they're sent to the slaughterhouse if they can't run fast enough. So, look, I'm not trying to make the case against horse racing. I'm saying that a lot of investigation has shown that people do very bad things in the pursuit of the almighty dollar when it comes to racing dogs and racing horses.
And this is a $1 billion industry that we're just getting a quarter of a percent of, considering that the state is propping it up. Why is that cap so small?
I asked the longtime chairman. The longtime chairman of the Racing Commission's term expired in 2015. That means they were supposed to have replaced him in 2015. Now, that's 8 years ago by my math. And he's not sure why he's still in place. I think, is an indication or an example of how little oversight this Racing Commission has had, that the chairman's term expired 8 years ago. I think what I found, and the reason I did this story, is that this is an example of a place in which government is supposed to be regulating, government is supposed to be looking out for the public's interest, and that public includes animals. And it's really just been ignored and allowed to continue doing something that maybe made sense in 1999, but probably doesn't make sense today. Part of what I describe in a story that's probably far too long is that the Racing Commission has regularly acted to expand gambling in Oregon in a way that would bring more money to the industry. But it has done so with products that are called historical horse racing, where you basically bet on a race that's already been run, where they change some of the variables so the outcome is different. It's like all things gambling. It's a little complicated, but the attorney generals here and in a number of states have said, look, this historical horse racing is basically a video slot machine. Mm. And so when they tried, they gave a company the opportunity, they gave them a license to offer that kind of racing, betting on racing in Oregon. And the tribes, which are very interested, Oregon has 9 federally recognized tribes, they are highly reliant on casino gambling. And they said, hold it, how come they're allowed to do it and we're not? Because mm-hmm. nobody was allowed to have on mobile devices in this state. And the lottery, which also wanted to do that, said, hey, how come they've been allowed to do this and we're not? And the answer was, nobody knew that they were doing it. Nobody knew that the Racing Commission, this tiny obscure commission, had given this company permission to offer this kind of betting. So the legislature put the brakes on that very quickly. No sooner did that stop than the Racing Commission tried to give Grants Pass Downs a license to install some of these historical horse racing machines down there. In fact, 225 of those machines. And so again, the tribes and the lottery said, hey, we're not allowed to do that. Why are they allowed to do that? And so the Oregon Department of Justice looked at the machines and said, yep, these are basically video slots. No, you cannot do that, because in Oregon, right now under Oregon law, you cannot have a casino unless you're a federally registered tribe. Mm-hmm. And so they said, this is basically, you put 225 slot machines in a room, that's a casino. So once again, the Racing Commission's plans to expand gambling were frustrated, because you know, they were looking very narrowly at the interests of people in the horse racing arena, not looking at what is state policy, what do the tribes want, what's best for Oregon. And So I think the overall impression that one could get is this is a very small agency that does pretty much what it wants to until somebody says stop.
How much is that executive director pulling in a year?
Her salary is $144,000 and change, and it's a small agency. I mean, they have fewer than 15 employees, and they have no office because They did have an office in Portland, but they dropped it in order to save money. So, you know, it is a narrow, obscure, yet very powerful in the sense that, as we've discussed, they prop up the racing industry nationally.
Best case scenario, that commission dissolves and that industry just peters out, or is the best case scenario that they get the oversight, that cap goes up, and they start really bringing in significant money for our general funds?
We need to, I think, have greater public scrutiny and greater legislative oversight of what we're doing, because there's huge money involved. Often a lot of that money is just leaving Oregon, where it isn't sufficiently regulated or nobody's really thinking about any of the policy consequences. So that would be my thought.
Big thanks to this week's guest, Nigel Jaquess, and thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, bye!